the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, Tarncast. It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, Tarncast. It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. This is the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, the Tarncast.
All right. Welcome to the Tarncast. I'm your host, Susan Tankersley. I don't know what I'm doing.
That's fair.
I was probably supposed to come up with questions, didn't do that.
That's a common thing on these shows that I go on as very special guest, Todd Robert Anderson.
Yeah, a lot of podcasts I find the host doesn't prepare well.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
And they ramble.
Uh-huh.
They say a lot. They say like.
Yeah, sure, sure.
So I'm going to try and do those things, because that's what the professionals do.
Okay, good, good.
So the only question I remembered preparing once upon a time was to ask you about Jericho.
Jericho, the TV show.
Because I'm familiar with at least the first half season, which I recapped back in the day at Television Without Pity, R.I.P.
What were your feelings about... The show.
I thought it was fascinatingly incompetent.
What was incompetent about it?
It was, well, when it started, I try to be a diligent recapper.
Mm-hmm.
And so I researched some of the stuff they were doing about, you know, they were worried about fallout. The premise of the show, for those of you who have not seen it, was there's some manner of nuclear attack in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And we follow the really stupid denizens of a particular town in Kansas, right? Kansas?
Yeah.
Including Skeet Ulrich.
Uh-huh.
And poor Gerald McRaney.
Yeah.
Of
Simon and Simon.
Of Simon and Simon. Rick Simon had the hat. They try to survive and figure out what was going on and... A lot of getting the generators working and and how are we going to feed all these people? And oh no, the people are questioning the mayor's decisions. And I think my friend Johanna and I came up with a theory that the wife of the mayor was maybe some sort of Lady Macbeth schemer and was murdering people and may have been responsible for the attacks. So this wasn't in the show. This was just how we were trying to make sense of
that. That could work, yeah.
So you enjoyed the show Jericho.
I did.
Please explain. I mean, I enjoyed it in a way.
Well, you know, I'm not a professional recapper or critic, so I'm sort of a, hey, I like that, or hey, I don't like that kind of viewer. Of television shows, because TV is not my number one thing. I like movies.
Right, yes.
But here's why. I do like, hey, Ron the Cat, stop fucking up my desk chair. God, don't, he's so soft. Oh. He hates being scratched and he bites, but he's so soft.
Yeah.
He's like a plush toy.
With claws.
With claws. And
pointy bits.
And yeah, teeth. Jericho. So I like post-apocalyptic stuff. So I forgive those things, you know? I mean, like, I keep watching The Walking Dead as frustrated as I get by it because I like zombies.
Right. And I understand they finally decided they should feature the zombies on the show a little more than they did.
This season, there's a lot more zombies, which is a good choice.
Right. That
for
seems
a
like,
zombie show.
It seems like.
But I that's clearly a budget thing.
Yeah.
They're getting more and more money every year, so they have more and more money to pour into the Nicotero makeup effects, which, you know, on that show, it's like, this season it's great, because there's some real grossy stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, if you make me go, oh, God, then you're doing it right, because I don't, you know, it's hard to get that reaction out of me. But Jericho, I don't know, maybe it's because... Like, it had a nostalgic thing because of The Day After Tomorrow when I was a kid. or not the day after, just the day after, not the day after tomorrow. That's the Roland Emmerich movie. Yes. But the day after, with Jason Robards and Steve Guttenberg and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And
William Devane.
And William Devane. And I loved it, and I didn't get to see it when it first aired because it was supposed to be too terrifying. Mm-hmm. And I remember they had hotlines and stuff for people who were freaking out. And you watch it, it does not hold up on any level. It's super cheesy, which Jericho is super cheesy. but also some of the I'm a McCraney fan.
Yeah, yes. And he...
And anything...
very good on it. And I felt very sorry for him a lot of the time.
That was the problem with the second season.
Mm-hmm.
Is they killed him off thinking that the show's over.
Oh, you think that's why?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. I think they knew the plug was being pulled. So they were like, let's, you know...
resolve this.
Let's do this. And then they were like, oh, we got to do this again. And without McCraney, it really was seriously missing something.
But wait a minute. Doesn't that give you more Skeet Ulrich?
Yeah. And ever since that ice cream truck movie he did with Cuba Gooding Jr., I can't get enough of Skeet. What was that movie called? Like, Chill Factor. That's what it was called, the Chill Factor.
Oh, my God.
And it's an action movie with an ice cream truck.
Wow.
Lots of chases?
Yeah, just chasings and shaky cameras.
Huh.
But I don't know. Like I said, I'm just a sucker for that kind of thing. And it was super soapy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
they did do one thing that I have... when I noticed that they were doing it, I was like, that's actually pretty clever. A better show should do this. Where they would structure it. It was structured differently from most hour dramas because they would sort of have, instead of a major A story and a smaller B story, they would sort of do an A story for the first half of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that would get resolved and would cause a B story the second half. So it was like the one... the first half was like, the library's on fire. We have to put the library fire out and rescue the children who are in the library.
And that'll cause some other
problem. And then in putting that out, somebody sprayed water and it caused an electrical fire on the thing. So, this is not a good example because they're both fires. But it was like that. Resolving the first problem would set up the second half of the show.
Right.
And it's like, that's pretty clever because then you don't have to pad something.
Yeah.
And...
I mean, and there was stuff about the show that... aggravated me. I guess it didn't because, I mean, I guess that's the thing about Jericho is I knew what I was watching, and it you know, it had a campy flair for me, and because of that structural thing you're talking about, which was different enough that it worked for me, and I do like stuff about people turning on each other in survival situations and trying to rebuild societies and then all that stuff. Like the kid with the store.
Yes.
You know, there's the lady with the store and the kid's helping and then she gets killed or whatever and he takes over the store and he gets really fascistic about the thing. Like, I don't know. I like all that kind of kind of junk. It excites me.
What did that remind me of? The, it was more the... like, at some point, they claimed that they had an advisor who knew about when the fallout stuff they were dealing with and that they would have as ongoing, oh, no, we're worried about radiation. It's like, you can't possibly, because I'm looking up what you're saying, and it's so wrong. I now know more than your advisor does.
No, it was not steeped in any kind of reality, but I was fine with that. And I like that guy. What's that actor's name? And he's on Walking Dead this season.
Yes.
And I really like him. I thought he was so good on Jericho. He was part of another.
Yeah.
It was him and McCraney's performances that kept me coming back. And like a couple of guys I'd done commercials with were playing cops and stuff. So it was fun to see those guys.
The guy who played it, was it Hawkins was his character?
Yes.
He kept, and he was
covering up. Like he knew more than he was letting on. And so
his justification for everything he knew was, "I used to be a cop in St. Louis," which was another running gag I had in the recaps. Was eventually that's his excuse for it. Like, I can make a pizza out of. Like, why? I used to be a cop in St. Louis.
That's also Robert Forrester's backstory in Alligator.
Oh.
He had a bad thing happen to him in St. Louis.
Well, it's a good place for that. As I recall.
That's why my friend Steve Skelton and I, we were at a party, and Bob Forrester was there. And we started talking to him about Alligator
as
fans of it. And he's like, oh, you guys should write a sequel. So we sat down and wrote a sequel called Alligator's Orgy of Destruction.
Nice.
Which was directly taken from the back of the Alligator VHS box because it said, it's an orgy of destruction. Nice. Which we were like, I don't know what that is, but it sounds great.
I don't remember the
orgy
of destruction in that, but I haven't seen it in quite a long time.
The party scene is an orgy of destruction.
Good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I just watched that the other day. Randomly it came up. But on YouTube.
I'm sorry, this is my producer stepping in.
Well, you were driving the boat.
Apparently we have a caller.
Do you remember in Alligator the old man who's like the villain of the piece?
Yeah, the old guy.
How is he the villain? What did he? Because he gets crushed inside his limousine. The alligator.
Because he's the guy. He's the guy who runs the. He's the guy who runs the chemical company that is illegally dumping their waste into the sewers under the city.
Which is what made the.
Which is what makes the alligator huge.
There you go.
And aggressive.
Not like other alligators that are normally known for
normally
being
really sweet creatures.
And
great, great with children. A perfect pet at any size. Yeah, but that's why he was. Yeah, that wasn't clear to me when I was a kid and I watched. I was like, I know this guy's bad. I don't know why, but having seen the movie as many times as I have,
that combination of Toby Hooper and John Sayles. I don't know. Will ever be recreated. I
mean, Alligator wasn't Toby Hooper.
Who was it?
It was
Louis Teague.
Louis Teague. Yeah,
who's like basically Toby Hooper to me. He's like an also ran to Toby Hooper to me.
Yeah, Toby Hooper though. Teague, I think was more of a kind of gun for hire type director because he directed all kinds of stuff.
Yes,
Navy SEALs, Jewel of the Nile, as opposed to. Toby, who's just kind of a horror guy. Right?
That's probably true, yes.
I mean, I'm trying to think, did Toby Hooper direct anything that wasn't in the genre of terror?
No. He directed some movies that didn't have any terror in them.
Right. And you're thinking about, too, he directed that friggin' Eaten Alive movie, which was sold as an alligator movie.
And nothing happened.
It's just people, Yeah, it's like, I don't know, it's like Motel Hell. It's like people show up to a bed and breakfast that's on a swamp.
Sure.
And the crazy people who run it keep an alligator in a tank that's connected to the place, and they throw people into the...
Well, it's kind of a lagoon, isn't it?
Yeah, like a lagoon. It's not, you know what, Jason, it's not clear. It's not made clear what is happening in the Eaten Alive. But it's like it was like he took a creature feature and put it in a swamp and added the crazy Texas Chainsaw Family. That's what that was. But when I saw that box, you know, in the video store when I was a kid, because I'd seen Alligator and I loved Alligator, I was like, Eaten Alive is another. This is great.
It's everything I want.
And then it's not that. You barely see the alligator. Oh. It's upsetting.
They should have a rating about how much alligator is in an alligator movie.
They should. They should. This one only has a half alligator.
Yeah, but if you start doing that, what do you do about the Godzilla movies where there's only ever like 7 minutes of Godzilla?
Maybe just that. Have how much time is the monster on screen in your monster movie?
I think it's a marketing error.
Or it could be a percentage even.
Yeah.
Because that way if it's a short movie, but... There's a lot of monster in
it. Yeah.
2% Godzilla.
Yeah, when it's Godzilla, you should see a lot of Godzilla. It's I get the concept of it's what you don't see that scares you, but it's like
when
I don't want to
scary. Anyway.
I don't want to get scared.
You want to see it. You want to see the buildings destroyed.
Yes.
You want to see Godzilla wrecking stuff and breathing fire and things and
baseball.
Yeah. And when you see a movie
basketball.
Called Eaten Alive, you want to see the alligator eat people alive.
Pretty much.
Segway. Speaking of eating a lot.
I think its original working title was something else, though.
Yeah, it was. When
I saw it at the, I have a really good segue here. Damn it.
Sorry.
It was called Legends of the Bayou.
I've lost control.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's what it was. Yeah. So, what's your segue?
Hannibal.
Sorry.
Speaking of eating a lot.
Nice.
Hannibal. See? Nice.
Nice work.
Yeah.
Hannibal the show.
All right, I'm out. I'm done.
The character.
The show.
The program.
Yes.
Which still
I, that
have
is
yet.
The other show I watch.
Still have yet to finish it. I think I got four episodes
the third,
left.
Of the third season. Third season's pretty rough going, but that finale...
Yeah, that's what I heard, finale. Is it gets good. I've gotten as far as them... The last episode I watched was so extraordinarily dull and ended with someone just saying Dollarhide. That was the, like, it was like Dollarhide, this character remember from Manhunter.
We've been teasing all season. Yeah, we're gonna get to that.
Okay,
minute.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. That's what I waited for. Right. Was just someone saying a name. Yeah. Is that there's a show that I've one of those shows. Maybe that's the show. I can't remember which show was driving me nuts. Like, the whole show, it'd be, like, kind of slow, and then the end of every show was introducing some character that you'd not seen before.
Right.
Played by maybe a recognizable actor, but that would be the big reveal at the end. Duh. There's another character!
Come back next week!
For another character! Right. It's like, no!
They didn't do that too often.
No,
but,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I like. There's a lot about Hannibal I like. Mm-hmm. I think it's shot amazingly.
Stunning, yeah.
When it gets gory, it's really amazing. And obviously the food porn stuff.
Yeah.
It's like a nice take on food porn because it's people. and you know, in the first season, it was really fun watching him eat food with Hugh Dancy and Lawrence Fishburne. But I mean, when you really look at it. Those shows should be about 15 minutes long because the pregnant pauses.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I thought was fascinating in that first season. As they gradually had less and less of their case of the week, would have less and less time devoted to it. And so there would just be scenes of people. Like, I think they were explaining, well, yeah, it's a really cheap show to produce. Like, it looks fantastic, but most of it is two people in a room talking.
Yeah.
Having very... pause-filled
like steeped in subtext.
Right, with metaphors well, what about...
And the acting is really good, mm-hmm. and they're all doing that, you know, they're all completely on point with mm-hmm. that style. But when you think about it, it's like what works about...
happens.
Yeah, what works about Hannibal, the character in Silence of the Lambs, and maybe Hannibal, mm-hmm. I don't know. But he's kind of on the loose in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely in Manhunter and Silence of the Lambs, not Red Dragon. How can you take Manhunter and make it so bland? Only Brett Ratner can make something that bland. It's fascinating.
You know what's creepy about that is that the guy who plays Hannibal Lecter in the movies, what's his name?
Hopkins?
Anthony Hopkins, yeah.
He
Brian Cox in Manhunter.
Right, sorry.
He was great.
But the Hopkins said that he wasn't going to... he was attached because Ratner was attached. And then fell out for some period. And Hopkins was like, oh, well, then I don't want to do it. So they got Ratner back.
Of Red Dragon?
Yeah. What was the last one? Hannibal or Red Dragon?
Red Dragon was the last one.
Yeah, because he apparently liked working with him on fucking Hannibal.
Wait, Ratner directed Hannibal?
I think so. He directed something.
No, Ridley Scott directed Hannibal.
Oh, right.
So something that Hopkins had done had led him to the conclusion that he really wanted to work with Brett Ratner again, and otherwise he really didn't want to do any more Hannibal stuff. At any rate, his relationship with Brett Ratner was such that he did not... he dropped out when Brett Ratner dropped out, and so they made sure to get Brett Ratner back, otherwise they wouldn't have...
I see.
Anthony Hopkins.
Huh, which, that's interesting.
Which I find depressing.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Yeah.
I don't think Anthony Hopkins was in any Brett Ratner movies.
Wow.
Except for that one.
Well, then maybe they're neighbors or something.
That's possible. That's possible.
Or he confused him with somebody else.
Wait, I thought this was Brett Michaels. The musician who I love and I wanted to help his transition to film director.
You know, that's how Fernando Rey got into French Connection, right? William Friedkin said, I want the bearded guy from The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie, and I want him here fucking tomorrow. And they looked at a print of Discreet Charm and they're like, they're all French and they all have beards. No. So
pick one.
Yeah.
They flew this guy over and he's like, not him. Okay, fine. Guess your frog won.
I should have been more specific.
But yeah, Hannibal is. If it's Hannibal, the character taking those dramatic pauses and talking right. in that creepy way, like that makes sense. But as the show went on, like everybody's yes. talking like Hannibal.
Right.
And I know that they're doing the thing with Hugh Dancy's right. character, you know, inhabiting Hannibal's mind and they're the same and they're playing that. And okay, I'll let that go.
Right.
But I mean, Manhunter's awesome because you have this like frenetically charged William Peterson right. who's like, I fucking just want to get, you know, that would be a more interesting thing. Like have Hugh Dancy be like, could you just fucking talk faster? Because I need to solve this crime before somebody else dies. How about that? You know, but he's not in any, nobody's no, in any rush. No.
And Fishburne. I think Fishburne actually, is occasionally
Fishburne's in more of a rush.
He
gets, yeah.
He starts shouting pretty easily.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. Fishburne was a little bit more volatile, but still in the dinner scenes, he would start talking
yeah.
slow.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of that has to do with the actors, you know, because Mads Mikkelsen can do anything, and he's really, really watchable when he's doing very little. Mm-hmm. And Lawrence yeah, Fishburne has two speeds, and Hugh Dancy has yeah. one speed.
Right, so right.
Hugh Dancy.
Stop eating my CDs, you goddamn cat!
God damn it!
I tried to entertain him. I was trying Aww. To keep quiet. I failed at both.
Yeah. So I mean, and I think another mistake, and this is my thing, like. Actually, I was listening to Tarantino, of all people, on Bill Maher, of all people's show.
Oh my God.
I happened to, be channel flipping, and I saw it. And Bill Maher just upsets me.
Yeah.
And Tarantino upsets me as an auteur, not as a human being. But the whole marching with Black Lives Matter against the cops and all that. So now I'm like, oh, you know, I'm on Tarantino's side politically.
Right.
I don't want to see The Hateful Eight, but maybe I will now. I don't know. But so he was obviously on talking about that whole thing. And pushing The Hateful Eight at the same time.
Wow.
But he said, it was really interesting, they were talking about 70s and 80s shows and how they were all contained stories.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, and maybe that had actually run its course, but they've gone too far in the other direction where absolutely everything requires you to watch it from the absolute beginning or you'll have no fucking idea what's going on.
Yes.
You know, You're the Worst follows the league, and we went to the mm-hmm. screening of the season premieres of both shows, and the league is full of people I really like and I think are funny, but I'd never watched the show before, mm-hmm. and I had no idea.
Oh.
Like, I had no idea what was happening.
Right.
I had no idea what the jokes were.
Yeah.
It felt like absolutely everything, like, if you hadn't watched the show before, you're not going to get a single reference.
Right.
It's all in-jokes.
Right.
And I agree with Tarantino. I think we've taken things too far in that place. It's like the X-Files. The first four seasons of that show I really liked. And then it started losing me in the fifth season. Mm-hmm. And then after the movie came out, and then the sixth season was like entirely mythology.
Right,
I was like, I'm done.
Yes.
I don't give a shit about the guy with the cigarettes and the government conspiracy. I like the monster of the week.
It's going to be stupid when you finally have
Right, and not satisfying.
Right.
And, you know, it's like everybody's a Lindelof if it goes on that long.
Right.
And I feel the same way. I mean, if Hannibal had been more of a, you know, crime of the week, mm-hmm. or even crime of the season, you know, whatever. But it's just, it's too drawn out.
Yeah.
And there's not enough story.
And
there.
I think, I mean, the first two seasons, I still, and the third season, that ending is amazing.
Yeah,
and
there were
some really good bits in the course of the season, but yeah, it could have been.
That's how it could have been
five episodes.
That's
long.
How I tell us now a show. That's the great thing about DVRs is I know a show is losing me when I stack it up.
Right.
And when I get to 10 episodes, I'm like, I'm not watching this show anymore. I have no desire to watch it.
Yeah.
It's like it's like friggin' church.
Right.
It's like you're watching this hour a week out of obligation.
Right.
That's the way I felt about
Lost. In the hopes eventually it pays off. Right. Right.
And then that came down to people hugging each other in a church. And
well, Lost, I knew from the beginning. That was when I learned that J.J. Abrams is probably my nemesis. Even in the from the pilot, where everyone was like, this looks great. I'm like, I don't think so.
Yeah, he gives great trailer and he gives great first act, but things fall apart.
I think when when there was an interview pretty early on when, you know, they swore, oh yes, we have an explanation for everything that's happened. I'm like, no you don't. And when they were interested, like, oh okay, we have an end date, we know what we're doing, we have a target, and we're really happy about that because we don't have to keep stalling. And I'm like, mm-hmm. But yeah, that sort of thing annoys me because basically what you're saying to me is that if I knew what was going on this show, I wouldn't watch it. Like, right. the only reason I'm watching is so you explain what the heck's going on. If I already knew what was going on, this would not be interesting.
Right,
in itself.
It's like an M. Night Shyamalan
right.
movie.
Yeah,
if,
yeah.
Like, The Sixth Sense is not a good movie if you realize what's going on, which I did
right.
within the first 15 minutes, mm-hmm. and then I leaned over and said that to my wife, and she's like, what? Fuck you! Like, she just shuts it off.
Right. Yeah.
It's fine. But I'm like, if you're presenting something as a puzzle,
yeah.
I'm going to try and solve it.
Right. Right, yeah.
You know?
I usually don't. The usual suspects.
Yeah, that was...
I wasn't trying to figure it out, but all of a sudden I was like, hey,
Well, yeah, the whole time I was like, he's Kaiser Soze. Oh. In fact...
Well, that None of this is stuff that has happened. This is all him telling this story.
Well, yeah, you know, that's one of the few movies... Jason and I have talked about mm-hmm. that before. That's one of the few movies where I kind of forgive that wake up from a dream ending mm-hmm. because it was enough fun along the way. But in the story, you know, before the wake up from the dream, I was like, he's Kaiser Soze. But then the story went on long enough and mm-hmm. was interesting enough and intricate enough that I doubted
uh-huh.
that and started saying, oh, no, wait. No, he's not. He is.
Oh, okay.
And that was not, as opposed to The Sixth Sense, where I was like, he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The Crying Game. That's a guy.
But see,
you know,
Crying Game I would defend, because I think there's so much more... Like, that's only one of the 20 ridiculous things going on that are...
Well, that's...
Movie.
Yeah, that's movie sort of bananas.
It's silly that he doesn't pick up on it, but on the other hand, he's...
But a lot of people...
A nice Catholic boy.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't pick up on it, and
or is he,
it was...
No, he's a nice Protestant boy, I guess.
Gave David Spade his greatest SNL joke.
What was that?
He was like, the secret of The Crying Game... It's overrated. But I actually, when I saw that movie, and I picked up on it right mm-hmm. away,
yeah.
I was in a theater in Times Square when we were in college in the early 90s, before, it was Hell's Kitchen.
Right.
And it was me and a couple of, idiot NYU actor guys in this theater filled with gangbangers.
Mm-hmm.
And when the reveal, because they hadn't picked
right.
up on it, when the reveal came up, oh my God, the just like angry, homophobic, screaming, like guys standing up, like, fuck you, because they were all attracted
right. sure.
to Jay Davison,
right.
who, by the way, I was very attracted to
sure.
in Stargate.
Mm-hmm.
Thought it was gorgeous. I thought it was a better woman in that movie without being a woman than he was in Crying Game. But they were mad.
Oh, wow.
They were so mad. They did not care for that.
Hmm.
Yeah, we were scared. We were scared. We're like, we should probably get out of here.
We didn't do it.
They might blame us for this. Yeah, it was something.
I remember a New York gangster audience for the True Romance, the eggplant scene. And I remember I started laughing real hard. maybe they're laughing so hard. Maybe they right about the time I started to get worried about it, which was immediately, I realized everybody was laughing, and they were all very much in on it.
Good.
Right,
which
right.
Which is why Tarantino gets to march with Black Lives mm-hmm. Matter, I guess, because he's an honorary thug or something.
I guess. I don't know.
Jesus Christ.
Ow.
Ron is eating Jason's foot. He seems very happy about it, too. He loves feet.
He gets to lie in a sundae and eat a foot.
Yeah.
So,
he's a foot cat, for sure. what was I going to say about oh, okay, here's my racially charged movie going story.
This is taking a turn.
I was working in video stores, so I'd seen, the Spike Lee movies
uh-huh.
leading up to Jungle Fever.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked them. Especially Do the Right Thing. So I was very excited to go see Jungle Fever. And I took a girl
uh-huh.
who was Italian in descent, much like the lady in Jungle Fever. And we went to a theater, and one of the only theaters it was playing at was, it was a predominantly black audience. We were the only two white people in there. And she's, you know, Italian-American, and they were getting pissed. I mean, it was, that movie was pushing buttons. And this row of women in front of us just started turning around and yelling at my date.
Oh my God.
I was like, oh, God, we should probably go.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do here. Because if I leave, if we leave, is that going to bring more attention, to it? And yeah, it was it was quite a, I felt bad.
Yeah.
That date did not work out.
It was kind of a butterfly effect moment for you.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's like you brought Elizabeth Shue to...
That's the trigger effect.
Oh, sorry.
The butterfly effect is Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah, that's different.
I like the trigger effect.
Hey, if your cat hadn't started eating my socks, I would have stayed quiet.
Well, what are you going to do? It's all right.
That's true.
No, you wouldn't have. I like that you referenced the trigger effect, though. That's fun. I like that movie.
I wanted to like it. I wanted.
But that's one of those movies where it's imperfect and ultimately not satisfying. But because of the setting and the kind of post-apocalyptic, and I did kind of like the end that it was like everybody was panicked for no reason. It was just the electricity was out. You know what I mean? It's like, why did we freak out about that? So I like that about it. And I did like issues, the whole thing with Kyle being a... Kyle MacLachlan being a wuss, and what's his face from Career Opportunities being a alpha male, and Elizabeth Shue being torn between the two of them, and baiting them to fight and all that. I kind of like that interplay. And then Michael Rooker shows up. That's never a bad thing.
Whatever happened to him? Is he still doing work?
Yeah.
I don't know Michael Rooker anymore.
Yeah, he still works all the time. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Like, does a lot of TV. I don't know. You're probably just not watching the stuff that he's in.
Yeah, I don't think
that would follow.
Yeah, he was he was on Doug Loves Movies once. It was pretty funny. And they were playing one of those games, and they were all Michael Rooker movies, and he didn't know any of them. He's like, what was that? Like, one of them, he's like, Sea of Love, and he's like, what's that? It's like, Al Pacino, you were in it. And he's like... Oh, I was in that. It was pretty fucking funny.
That's great.
It was pretty great. Yeah. It was the opposite of Stanton there. Harry Dean Stanton, who knew all the movies he was in.
Nice.
He did? Because he knows nothing else. One of the, there's that documentary about Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Somebody's line about Harry Dean Stanton is, Harry doesn't remember anybody or anything.
No.
And they're asking all these questions, and it's basically all the Harry Dean Stanton part, clearly one short day, and he's like, no, 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 really? What? No.
Yeah, he's just a cranky old fella. But he knew all his movies on Doug Loves Movies. Yeah, he did well at the games.
Excellent.
So that was interesting. And he's ornery, that fella.
Yeah.
He was ornery on the podcast. It's kind of amusing. I like ornery old guys. It's fun.
Hope to be one someday.
Who's your favorite ornery old guy?
Oh, gosh. In life, or
well, yeah, there's that. I guess I'd go with my grandfather if I was going with that, because he was a fun, ornery old guy. But
I like Stanton quite a bit.
Yeah, Stanton's a good ornery old guy.
I mean, on the occasions when he was ornery, who was the guy who was John Wayne's sidekick and all those fucking things, and he was.
I really don't know enough about John Wayne movies.
He was Jimmy Stewart's sidekick in Winchester 73. He's the, you was wrong, Mr. Dunson. You was wrong.
Oh, yeah, I know that guy. I can't remember his name, though.
Man. He played the villain in, he played Ike Clanton in Gunfight at the OK Corral against Henry Fonda, and he was murderous, shoot you in the back. A terrible old man.
Oh, boy.
Beyond ornery.
That's murderous. It's not just ornery.
Hmm.
Yeah, I just like ornery old guys, I guess. I was like Burgess Meredith.
He
was a good ornery old guy.
Ow.
I like a disappointed dad old man. Like a...
Less ornery and more disappointed.
Right. It just makes me feel bad.
Like a Robards, like a Jason Robards.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
He did a lot of disappointed dads.
I was just thinking of Edward James Olmos. Like, just being like, you fucked up. Damn it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, I'm sorry.
Edward James II was... His thing is always... He's not so much disappointed as... He's expecting.
Yeah.
He's not disappointed. He's just expecting it all to be awful. Resigned, and then he's like, look, it's awful.
You're going to fuck up. And then I'm going to have to try to fix it.
Yeah, that's his thing. Yeah, I like that guy. I used to love him.
And Joe McGraney. He was a disappointed dad on Jericho.
Yeah, he was.
Fuck up kids.
Jesus. He's like a little bit more. He's a little bit more harder edged.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah.
Like, almost it's like. Yeah, you fucked up, but, you know, whatever, I'll fix it.
Yeah.
And McCraney's more of a guy who's like, you fucked up, and I'm going to fix you. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. He was good on Deadwood, too.
Oh, right.
He was a little bit creepy on Deadwood.
Yeah.
He was really good. And creepy on Major Dad.
Right, yeah.
Super creepy.
Not creepy on Simon and Simon.
No, I don't think he was supposed to be creepy on Major Dad.
He was pretty lovable there.
Yes, he was lovable.
He just brought the creep.
Yeah,
as
he got older.
Yeah, you know, there wasn't.
I think it's
because
he didn't have the hat. He had the hat on Simon and Simon, and so that really offsets things. You're like, oh, he's a cowboy. He's fine.
Yeah, he had a hat and a boot full of water.
Oh, right.
That he dumped out
in
every theme song.
And a dog named Marla.
Did you see that? What was that? The greatest event, that thing that Adam Scott did and John Hammond, they're just doing a shot-for-shot remake of the Simon and Simon thing.
Oh, no, I haven't
seen that
one.
The most important thing in television history or whatever. It was really funny.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Really funny. I think they did another one, too.
And poor Jameson Parker.
Jameson Parker, star of Prince of Darkness.
Yeah, which I just saw. I mean, not just. I've seen it in the past year.
Is he the one who just acknowledged that he molested children or something?
No, that's the Seventh Heaven guy.
Oh, the Seventh Heaven
guy. I hope it's not Jameson Parker.
You mean the guy whose wife recorded him in a therapy session?
Right, yes.
Yeah. No, that's not Jameson Parker.
They look a lot alike to me.
Yeah, kind of.
Both blonde, good-looking guys.
Yeah, that's true.
The 80s.
Yeah. No, Jameson Parker's all right. You just don't see him much anymore.
Well, no, he had at some point, I looked up, something awful happened to him.
Oh, really?
I think, was it a stalker?
Oh my god.
Something where like he got shot, I think.
Shot?
Really? And then left acting, I think.
Oh my god.
So, go Google this. I'm not.
Who would shoot Jameson Parker?
I know.
He's delightful.
I know. And Gerald McRaney had to like apparently talks about it from time to time. Like I can't remember. And so
I'd never heard that before.
I'm sure I have all the details wrong, but there's something nasty happened and so he I believe pretty much left acting.
Oh, well that makes sense. Well, it's weird when you learn stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because some people just disappear.
Right, yeah.
Like I was talking about Kim Grease the other day, the lady from Brazil.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
And Chud and a bunch of other things. And I loved her when I was a kid. And then, you don't see her anymore.
Yeah.
And the guy who was in... Lost them all. I had two of them in my head. He was in Vision Quest, and he was in 16 Candles. He was the good-looking...
the good-looking guy who looked kind of like Dylan, but it wasn't Dylan.
Yeah, and he bailed. He just said, you know...
I'm not doing
this. It's not enough. It's just too much work, and I don't like it.
It's too much work, and I don't like it.
I'm going to do something easier than this.
That's understandable. Good for him.
I'm tired of just being a pretty
I respect that, like, bailing out of the business.
Yeah.
It's sadder, though, if it's like you feel like your life is being threatened and you won't leave because you're terrified of getting shot again.
Yeah.
I mean, that's horrible.
If Jameson Parker leaves the business, the terrorist wins.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He should have stuck with it. He was good in Prince of Darkness.
It's too bad Prince of Darkness didn't live up to him, you know?
Yeah.
The movie's got a lot of problems.
A few.
It's a clunky Carpenter picture, but I'm all right. I'm a Carpenter apologist, so.
Indeed.
The only, I'm trying to think. I mean, even The Fog, I'll watch.
I was just looking at your collection. It's ludicrous. There's a couple.
Even vampires.
There. There's a couple I didn't even know about.
Well, a couple of them at the end, there are TV shows.
Well, the earliest, Someone's Watching Me.
That's a TV movie.
Oh, okay. My God.
So, yeah, you got the TV movies. He did a couple. He did the Elvis movie with Kurt Russell, which was his first Kurt Russell project. That was a TV movie. And then those Masters of Horror episodes were TV. And then that hospital thing that he did, The Ward, was a, you know, direct-to-video picture that he was hired to direct. That was his last feature, which is sort of, I don't know, I get bummed out when guys I like go out on stuff that's not good.
Yeah.
Like Gene Hackman, his last fucking credit is Welcome to Mooseport.
Oh, God.
I mean,
do you remember
I want to force him out of retirement to do something.
Leading up to that, though, there was that thing with Paul Newman and...
Twilight?
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
Wow.
That wasn't good.
I bet you he had a contractual obligation, but I bet you that was the one. I don't know. Do you know why? Did he have a breaking point at some point?
I don't know. I mean, said like he was acting into his 70s, right? I mean,
oh yeah.
How old is he now? He's like,
you know, he writes novels now.
Oh, he does.
He sits in New Mexico and writes little detective stories. Apparently.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I like that guy.
I remember watching Twilight, thinking I would quit everything if I were in this. If I had done all this great shit, and then I'm with these other people, and I'm like, hey. I'm in a movie with Paul Newman. I got Susan Sarandon. This is going to be a good movie. Mm-hmm. You know, as good as I can get.
Well, it feels like one of those studio package deals where people sign on to it because they're like, this is going to be...
Yeah, look at this cast.
This is going to be great. Yeah. And then it's not.
Yeah. Wreckage. Yeah. And I can imagine him going, fuck. If this is as good as it's going to be, then I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
Because this sucks.
Well, he did do Welcome to Mooseport after. That's all I'm saying. I mean, Hackman wasn't
did he do
one.
Do it after, or was it released after?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. I think it was released after, though, because he was doing some kind of. But he was doing. He did the. What was the family? The Tannenbaums. He did that, and he got all. I didn't care for it, but he got all this critical acclaim for that. And he was doing some fun Tony Scott stuff too.
Yep.
Like action shows.
Yep.
So, and in the 80s, he did a lot of really bad comedies. Like, Loose Cannons is an example.
What was that? The Package?
Remember, oh, The Package!
Not a comedy, but just a travesty of a picture.
Tommy Lee Jones. It was an Andy Davis joint.
Yeah, it sure was.
Yeah. But see, those cheesy Hackman thrillers like Company Business.
What was the one on the train? The remake?
Narrow Margin. Yeah, like those bad thrillers with Hackman, I totally can sit down and watch. If they're on, I will watch them because that's how much fun he is. But like, I don't know, there's something about Welcome to Mooseport that was just upsetting. It was just, it was too bad, you know?
Well, a bad comedy,
yeah,
like a bad drama. You can find something.
He's better as a leading man in a thriller situation, I think. Although really funny in Young Frankenstein, but that's like a sequence.
You know what I thought he was really really funny in was the remake of the La Cage aux Folles, The Birdcage.
Oh,
yeah, he was funny in that.
Funniest thing about that movie,
that
movie in which nothing worked.
Well, he can be really funny.
His name is terrible. Fucking
Robin Williams.
Robin Williams is not very good in that. The girl, the girl that's fucking Harrison Ford, Calista Flockhart.
Calista Flockhart.
I think really good in that, and Hackman steals it. Hackman's awesome.
Yeah, he's really funny in that. But yeah, I guess I just miss that guy.
Yeah.
I miss Gene Hackman.
We should take a road trip.
Go see him. What's up, Gene? Yeah, just show up.
It's not that far.
Tell him you're doing a podcast.
I'm doing a podcast.
He's the host.
Yeah, what's up? But he's not like sick or anything with any debilitating aged things that pushed him out. Fuck this, I'm retiring.
I'm old enough and I don't like it.
Yeah, he can't make me.
He did get in that fight right before he retired. Yeah. Speaking of getting attacked. Beat the shit out of like 220-something-year-old guys.
Nice.
I heard it the other way around.
Oh, really?
But I don't know. Where did you...
Well, I mean, he got hurt, but I'm pretty sure he won the fight. That's my understanding.
All right.
That was my understanding.
Well, maybe it was a deal.
But, you know, that could have been PR people going,
he lost his L.A. privileges.
Yeah. Or he just didn't want to be in L.A. and get in fights with people anymore. Mm-hmm. He was sick of it.
Maybe it's harder to do that in New Mexico.
Harder to get in fights?
Or harder to...
people.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Less traffic.
Maybe they're just not as tough there. Mm-hmm. So if you do get into the fight, you're not going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm. In New Mexico?
Yeah, they're a bunch of pussies.
No offense, New Mexico. Just speculating. I don't know.
Todd Robert Anderson thinks everybody in New Mexico is...
Wait, what? How did this... how am I getting thrown under this bus? This is not cool. This is not cool. I've suffered enough.
We're going to... Well, I saw Starship Troopers 3. Oh.
I've suffered enough.
I think that is the
you
one I
asked
saw.
Asked for that shit. Why would you do that? Why would you do that?
I don't know.
It was there.
It was there, yeah. Damn.
I think I watched it because somebody else on Netflix said they were about... Or on Twitter said, I'm about to watch this. And I was like, I'll join you.
Oh, okay. So you did a live Twitter
a little bit, not feed very much. Yeah, I'm easily influenced.
Yeah,
is pretty much what happens. People are like, I'm going to do a thing. Like, okay, I'll do it.
It does have some all right gore in it for a movie that clearly cost about $700 to make. They at least have the gore and the nakedness in it.
$700 is a lot of money, Todd. Mm-hmm. Just because you're,
I know, I wasn't.
Comfortably middle class. You should be able to look down on a $700 picture.
No, I don't look down on $700 pictures at all.
Maybe a little.
Maybe a little. I mean, I've...
If you've only got $700, maybe you shouldn't be spending it on movies.
Yeah.
There's $700 worth of bad movie in one stack on one shelf of your...
But a lot of movies.
That's true.
A lot of movies.
Last Man Standing.
So many.
How could you stand yourself?
Yeah.
When I realized...
I like that movie.
When I realized that... No, you don't.
Everybody's getting shot.
13 Assassins, though.
Sometimes, yeah, 13 Assassins is a good movie.
Yeah. Sometimes I just watch that last, you know, 45-minute fight scene when I've had a bad day at work.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
You're talking about the one... Wait a minute.
No.
The Keanu Reeves?
No.
Thank God.
No.
13 Assassins.
Keanu Reeves. That's
This is a... Is it...
That's
is
me, okay? I know what you're thinking
Ronan
of.
Or something?
Yeah, exactly. Ronin something.
Oh, this. Yeah. I do want to see this.
Yeah, 13 Assassins, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, it's Takashi Miike.
Yeah.
But Ninja Assassin is
kinder,
not so hot.
The kinder, gentler Takashi. He's not Takashi Ishii.
Right.
But he's not that much kinder.
He's a little bit. He's certainly a better filmmaker, I would say.
Who's the other guy's made what?
The other guy's the guy that did Ichi the Killer.
Right. Oh, right.
And that one with the pig head for the poster. I can't remember. Oh.
And this guy is the guy who did Old Boy? Am I getting that right?
The one who does... He does tons of them.
Does lots of different stuff.
Yeah.
And Takashi Ishii mostly does gross-out crime movies with a supernatural bent. Or a lot of those, at any rate.
Right.
But I think Miike
47 Ronin. That's the Keanu Reeves movie. Right. 47 Ronin. Yeah.
He's just done... He just has a bigger volume. I think Miike's done those too. It's just he's done everything else as well.
Yes,
like
exactly,
he does children's musical, animated musicals, and he does 13 Assassins.
No, who did Audition?
Oh yeah, who did that?
I want to
sure.
say that.
I think that's.
Is that right?
I think it is Miike.
Yeah.
And he also did a Masters of Horror episode that they didn't air.
Yes, really? I saw that. Holy, yeah. Hope. Yeah.
Is that bad? Or?
Well, it was. Yeah, it was. It was pretty rough.
Wow.
But it, I mean, they didn't air it.
The fetuses and all.
Like, it was like an abortion horror story.
Among other things.
So like a bunch of like fetuses in a river and shit.
And that was just one section. Yeah, yeah. It was pretty rough.
Yeah, it was rough going. Rough going.
And it had, who's it? The white-haired...
It's been so long.
Okay, so which one did Dead or Alive? The Dead or Alive series. I think that was Miike, which is my favorite opening 5 minutes of any movie is Dead or Alive. They break, stealing Elvis Mitchell's line, I think, but they break, like, all of the seven deadly sins that are committed, like, before the credits in this movie.
Ah!
It's kind of MTV... music-infused montage opening sequence.
Uh-huh.
It's enormously satisfying, and it's better than the whole three movies that follow it.
Oh, okay.
Just that first few minutes. I'm pretty sure...
I don't think I've ever seen any of those.
I'll bring it. I'll bring it at some point. I'll make you watch the fucking thing.
Wow.
You're thrilled, right?
We have a really weird relationship. if you do that, I'm going to make you watch 10,000 B.C.,
Jesus.
I'll be
Gauntlet dropped. did you see that? 10,000 BC?
I did not. I have not seen it. I think it may have floated past me in Netflix or something.
What I love about that whole project, not that I've seen it, of course, given that it's a Roland Emmerich movie and I didn't have to.
Right.
is that they're gonna okay. The 1 million BC franchise, right? Not that that's a franchise per se, but it has been a going concern, you know, every 30
years. I feel like we live in a time where now everything is a franchise. Yeah.
At least potentially.
1 million BC, that's silly.
Yeah.
Man and dinosaurs didn't coexist.
Right.
But so what if...
Roland Emmerich, right?
Uh-huh.
He's going to take the responsible step of calling it 10,000 BC,
mm-hmm.
making a much more realistic picture.
Right.
Surely.
Sure. It's surely very realistic. Yeah. Yeah, at every turn, it's completely realistic. Yeah.
Unfortunately, what this means is that men don't fight Tyrannosaurs,
mm-hmm.
which is the whole reason you would watch such a movie.
Yeah, but they fight saber-toothed tigers.
Right. It's a fuck. Is it a big lizard? Is a saber-toothed tiger?
We need the lizard rating scale. No.
Does he stand upright with little hands?
And they have woolly mammoths to help him build the pyramids.
Oh.
I've upset Jason.
Is Ben Carson in this show?
Yes. Jesus rides on the back of woolly mammoths.
The pyramids were actually mammoth hangers. I'm going to let you guys wrap this up.
We probably should wind up.
Yeah, I got to go get my kid at school.
Yeah, we got to go meet other people and have another meal.
Nice. Yeah. That's what vacations are all about, right?
Apparently.
It's like in between meals. Yeah. It's like, what are we doing for our next meal?
And then when do I get to start drinking is my question.
You can drink whenever.
I was taking pills that I couldn't drink on, but I think I'm done with them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like antibiotics or something?
Painkiller. Because I had back issues, which seemed to have resolved. Oh. Anyway,
I thought painkillers went great with booze.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's probably not good for you.
Probably not.
No, especially if they have like acetaminophen or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not good for your liver. Bad for your liver.
So now that I'm not on that, I can drink, which is good for your liver. Here.
Oh, drinking's great for your liver.
Yeah.
Yeah, make that happen. Well, thanks for having me on your show.
I'm glad you could make it. and bring all the equipment and have it at your house.
You're ruining the illusion. Thanks, Susan.